you with, dog?
With the Bucks, dog.
You sure you with the skills?
All the way, Raymond James, dog.
Chad Walls,
dog.
Man, you crazy?
Dolphins? Fucking is, dog.
Cowboys?
Don't talk about the Bucks, yo. Welcome to Tampa, home of the Raymond James.
This is the Pewter Plank Podcast. My name is Ken Bulkey. I'm joined with Leo Howell. And today we're talking about three different subjects. First of all, special teams and how the Bucks need to change that coming up in the next season. Defense. Basically, we did last week or last podcast, which was a little more than a week ago. Sorry. We talked about the offense and how we wanted to see that change and what kind of decisions they're going to have to make. We're going to do the exact same thing with the defense. But what we're going to start with today is over the past week and a half, 2 weeks or so, the coaching staff slash front office has really come together and has given us a better idea of the way that the franchise is heading and the interaction between Lovey and the new GM, which is Jason Light.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of things have changed. And like you said, we did miss a week. I caught the typical January plague that everyone seems to get.
See, they don't get those here in Vegas. We don't really get those because it's not 4 degrees, which you guys really shouldn't either.
Yeah, it's not. It's just when it's 35 in Florida, everyone huddles up inside underneath a blanket. And so it has the same effect of everyone's inside in a house with the heater on. And I think that's what actually makes people sick. But anyway, yeah, over the past couple of weeks, pretty much everything has been ironed out and settled in terms of who's going to be doing what. And, yeah, like you said, I mean, we should definitely start with those coaches and front office and everything. Like you said, Jason Light's the new GM. He's a really experienced guy. He's got varied experience, most of it with the Patriots. Spent some time with the Eagles as well, and then most recently was with the Arizona Cardinals, where he got as high as a vice president of player personnel was his last role there, and that was actually kind of a promotion in response to him almost getting the Chicago job, which is how Lovie Smith knew about him. There's a lot of concern, a lot of talk about like what Light's role is actually going to be, blah, blah, blah. He said in his press conference that the GM's job is to serve the head coach and to get the players that the head coach needs to win. And I think that as long as that's the mentality, it doesn't matter what the like contractual roles are as to what he gets to do and what Lovey gets to do and stuff like that. That stuff doesn't matter to me from that perspective. He's got a good experience. He's got good proven experience in the draft. He really likes getting value picks and free agency. So you're not going to see like a scenario where the Dolphins or the Browns last year where they spend really big in free agency and get nothing out of it. I mean, he's part of the scouting staff that scouted Tom Brady. I mean, I don't know how much he actually had to do with that, but that's his mentality. He likes the Patriots model, and he was kind of doing that with the Cardinals. They had some under-the-radar guys coming in there who were kind of impressive. They just never had a quarterback, so they never really got over the top, but I'm really impressed with Light, and if he works well with Lovey, I think that's all you can ask for. But one thing that we had mentioned as a concern for a new GM, and one that we've already kind of had calmed for us, this fear, is about the contracts. And Light has actually already mentioned in radio interviews his respect for what Mike Greenberg, who is his official title is Director of Football Administration, but he's the salary cap guy. And Light has specifically said his name, Mike Greenberg's name, in interviews and praised his ability to manage the cap. And there have already been talks about how Light's not going to do contracts and stuff like that. So if one of the things that you liked, and I'm talking to you obviously as well, Ken, and in addition to people who are listening, if one of the things you liked about Mark Domenech was the way he handled contracts, I don't think that's going to change at all, because it sounds like Mike Greenberg is the guy who was over all that anyway. And that's the only member of the front office that Jason Light has mentioned. He never mentioned Hickey before he was hired. He's never mentioned Shelton. He's never mentioned Eric Stokes by name. He's only mentioned Mike Greenberg. So he's going to be working with Greenberg. He may not even be Greenberg's boss for all we know. Greenberg may have just unilateral power over contracts, and that may be something that, you know, keeps things the way they were with Domenech, except with a different brain behind the scouting and actual talent part of it, which may be, you know, an improvement.
There was one other thing that you and I were quite concerned about before there was ever a general manager. Was there was a lot of talk about Lovey's contract and what kind of decisions he has. And I think that's all been eased as well, which was many of us thought that Lovey was going to have final say on kind of who comes in, who goes out, and how they're going to make all these personnel decisions. Well, as it turns out, basically the only thing that he has is who are the last 53 men on the roster, which makes perfect sense because he's the guy who has to coach those final 53. So I think that's something that really came out that eased my tension of how this is going to work, because I don't like general manager, head coach as being kind of the same thing. I think they're very separate, and I think that's going to be a good thing moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, 53-man roster decisions start, you know, a little earlier than that last week of the preseason, but I do think that the Buccaneers are going to have a good relationship between the two, and that Light and his staff are going to prepare for the draft and prepare for free agency and prepare for all these things, and Lovey's just kind of going to kind of get his say on, is this guy worth a roster spot? And one of the things that Light said in the introductory press conference is that if he goes to the coach and the coach isn't convinced by what he has to say up front, he's going to go back 20 times. Because Light's very confident in what he does. And so if he says, you know, X free agent is who we should get, and at first pass, Lovey's like, I don't know about that, Light's not going to just give up because the coach said no. He's going to go in 20 more times with different tape and different, you know, scouting reports and say, here's why this guy's good. And that's going to happen anyway. You could have all powerful GM and a first year head coach, and they're still going to disagree. And it doesn't sound like what Lovey's able to do contractually is just to override everything that the GM does. It's not set up like that. It was Jay Glazer of Fox who reported it's a real GM job. It's just that Lovey, like you said, gets to make the decision that a coach probably should get to make, which is, you know, those last few decisions of, do I want a sixth wide receiver or do I want a fifth linebacker or, you know, whatever. Just those basic fundamental, here's the guys I'm going to have to use every week. How do I want to set them up? And I think that makes a lot of sense. But regardless, I don't think that any of those things matter just because of how well Light and Smith are going to work together.
Makes perfect sense to me. We'll kind of just clean it up for anybody who's been listening and has kind of lost track of where it's all going. I think the obvious two that we've all been talking about, Lovie Smith's the head coach, Jason Light is the general manager. Those are probably the two most important. The last time we did a podcast, we did know Jeff Tedford. Mm-hmm. We did know that Leslie Frazier seemed to be either at that point definitely the guy, or we knew it was pretty close. Mm-hmm. But that is now official. Leslie Frazier is the defensive coordinator. There were a lot of other head coach names thrown around. None of them wound up sticking with the Buccaneers. Special teams coordinator is Kevin O'Day. He is formerly from the Chiefs. And then the number of different front office positions, like you said, Mike Greenberg, kind of the, what are we going to call him, the contract guy?
Yeah, cap, the cap expert.
Director of football administration is what Buccaneers.com has. Dennis Hickey, Shelton Quarles, Eric Stokes, now all still a part of the team.
Well, Scott Cohen. Yeah. Hickey's not. I don't know if that's been made official yet.
Is it not?
Because he's the Dolphins GM now.
Oh, of course,
But of course, the Bucs aren't going to take him off the site until all that's done and dusted. But I assume that that's as official as it can be. But Hickey, there were rumors that Hickey wasn't going to be around anyway. As far as Stokes and Quarles go, they'll at least stay through the draft before any big decisions are made if Light wants to change those guys out.
I would be surprised if either of them are shipped away based on just the fact that, number one, Shelton Quarles is a Buccaneer guy, which is hard to get rid of that guy. And then Stokes, we've talked about it a number of times. You can just look at what he's done and what he's amassed in the past couple of years that he's been here, and you got to be pretty happy with that. And then my thought is, after the draft, I can't imagine you go into a draft some players, and they're like, you know what? I don't think we like Eric Stokes anymore because this draft sucked. It doesn't really work like that. Yeah. They should all be on the same page by the time the draft's over and be pretty happy with what happened.
And the great thing is that with Hickey leaving, now Light has an upper management position to bring in a guy that he likes if he wants to, and then he can keep Quarles and Stokes in their same jobs. Or if he wants to bring in a lesser guy, he can promote Quarles or Stokes to that position that Hickey used to have and then bring in one of his guys who's maybe not quite ready to be an upper guy. But if he's got someone in mind who he wants to be his right-hand man, he can still do that because of the position opened by Hickey. So I don't see any reason why he'd want to get rid of those guys unless he's literally got a staff already in mind. And considering he's never been a GM of his own before, it would be really strange if he had his own staff already planned out.
Okay, let's move on to some people that the people listening are actually going to know, which are the players on this team and player decisions that are going to have to be made. We're going to start with the defense, and the defense that had a good year. I mean, you really have to be happy with what the Buccaneers did as a whole defensively. There were some times where there were a little bit of let up, games that they didn't really have their best game. And I thought getting at the quarterback is still something that can certainly be improved, but there are going to be some contracts coming up. Let me start with this. Gerald McCoy, Lavonte David, and Darrell Revis are all superstars in this league and all are going to be mainstays with this team for an extended period of time. So we're going to kind of work around the other eight spots because those three, there's really no reason to talk about anything beyond making fun of Luke Kuechly if we get on Lavonte David. So let's just start on the defensive line. The other defensive end, or well, a defensive end, I guess we'll start with. Let's start with Claiborne.
And Claiborne's really where you really start the decisions as to what does this guy's role become? Is he going to remain as a starter with someone else on the other side? Because you almost figure like the Bucks have to add a defensive lineman this year in some way, shape, or form. Because William Golston showed some nice things, and I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about him too. But there's no one else on that other side except for the slight promise of Golston in terms of any sort of production at all. Claiborne was the only guy, and he wasn't even that productive. He's pretty good against the run, but did struggle getting after the quarterback, which is, you know, really more than half the job of a defensive end is to get after the quarterback. But, I mean, Claiborne has a role. I don't feel like you need to get rid of him, but I don't think I want to see him as a 1,000-snap guy anymore. You know, I just don't. I don't think that there's some magical thing that's going to happen to Adrian Claiborne to get him better unless there's something that can be coached out of him as a pass rusher that we just haven't seen yet. And that's possible. With a new coaching staff, they may be able to coach him and get more out of him as a pass rusher. But I just don't think that he's some 1,000-snap guy anymore. I think that with Adrian Claiborne, you've got a good first couple of downs, solid run defender. And I think that that's it. I like him. I don't have anything, you know, extremely negative to say except that he just doesn't win as a pass rusher. And you gotta be able to win, particularly because Lovie's not going to blitz like Bill Sheridan did. Lovie Smith defenses don't blitz 57% of the time or whatever the ridiculous number is. And they're also not going to stunt. So Claiborne's just going to have to win, and I'm not sure he can do that.
Is that a spot you're looking at the draft, or is that a spot you're thinking somebody along the lines of a Jared Allen or somebody of that sort to bring in and go the free agent route?
I think the defensive line would be – I think it would be better with a free agent, with a veteran. I don't –
Yeah, I absolutely agree. For me, it's you'd rather go with somebody you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
Because even if there's been too many times where they've gone with draft picks.
Yeah, even if they're not elite, even if they're not the best, just knowing you can get a guy who can touch 10 sacks is better than, well, Coney Ealy from Missouri might be, you know, a really good pass rusher, but he could also be like every other rookie pass rusher in the past 10 years and just not do anything for 2 or 3 years while he learns the game. Pass rusher is one of those positions that in the draft you don't get instant impact every time. I mean, sometimes you do. You got a guy like Sheldon Richardson last year, but, you know, he was also coached by Rex Ryan in a very unique defense. So there's always, you know, something to it.
Whereas, are you playing with me now, just naming all Missouri players?
That's not intentional.
Is that what's happening? We're going to talk about Michael Sam next as well?
Oh, you don't want me to do that. He didn't look very good in the Senior Bowl week, I guess. But anyway, yeah, I'd rather see, even if it's not a first-tier free agent. I mean, Greg Hardy, Jared Allen, Justin Tuck, those are the big names. I don't even care if it's not one of them. Just whoever they trust in terms of Lovie and the GM, whoever they trust to get 10 sacks. You know, I don't think that that's a ridiculous expectation, particularly because Claiborne would still be around and he could maybe chip in 4 or 5 doing part-time work. I mean, that's
not when Gerald McCoy is still on the line.
What's that?
as long as Gerald McCoy's on the line, it's going to be a lot easier to get sacks from the outside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you don't need an elite guy. Would an elite guy be great? Yeah. I mean, adding Greg Hardy would be out of this world incredible for the Bucs defense. But I just don't think that that's realistic, because I think you could spend your money in better ways. I think you can get a cheaper defensive lineman and, you know, and kind of go from there. I mean, you could draft a Von Miller hybrid linebacker type to do some pass rushing, and that guy would probably kick Claiborne off the field. But other
that's Khalil Mack, right?
Yeah, that would be like a Khalil Mack or an Anthony Barr, those two specifically. I guess I should say this. If Jadeveon Clowney's there at the seventh pick, I'd take Jadeveon Clowney. But
that's not a terribly difficult decision. That's like saying if Greg Hardy says he wants to play in Tampa Bay, you take him, of course.
So, but I just feel like we need to say that just in case, because there are mock drafts out there that you'll see that'll have Clowney at 5 or 6 or whatever. And so by the odd chance that he falls to 7 or the Bucks love him so much that they'll trade up to 5 to get him if he falls that far. And mainly I'd like to trade up ahead of the Falcons because I don't want to face him as a Falcon. So if he falls to 5, I think the Bucks should go get him just so that they don't have to play against him. But just so that people listening know, just to not assume anything, Clowney erases all of that don't draft one discussion.
Yes. Give me Jadeveon Clowney. Yes.
I don't think
okay, so let's just clean it up. Daniel Teo-Nesheim, he's gone, right?
Teo-Nesheim, he's not even under contract. So.
I mean, there's no scenario in which he should be wearing pewter pants next year.
Not unless he gets a camp invite and earns a spot. Like,
or if somebody changes their jersey.
Because he only signed a 1-year tender as a restricted free agent, and so now I think he's just an unrestricted free agent. So, like, they won't even just bring him back and stumble him into a spot. Like, he'd have to be brought in as, like, a camp invite and win a job. I seriously doubt he has a future with this team.
Okay, how about Steven Means?
I don't think you can say he doesn't have a role in this team. I mean, he only played 80 snaps, but he was always kind of viewed as a project. Moving from 4-3 outside linebacker to 3-4 defensive end. And he had his moments of brilliance, but he just didn't have a big body of work to really know what you're getting. So I could see him getting forced out by adding new guys, but, you know, with Teo-Nesheim, I'm definitely not coming back. There's still a spot there to get that's not guaranteed to be taken away, I guess, which is the way I should say it. So I could see him being back, but it wouldn't kill me if he was gone. It's nice to have project guys around, but I'm not sure that this team can afford to have one at the defensive line spot.
And with the new GM and the new head coach, there usually are a lot of those fringe players they move on from, and they bring in their own fringe players. And that's why I would guess Steven Means is probably a guy that I'd be surprised if he sticks around. Now, there is one other one that we have not discussed. That's Akeem Spence. We move into the tackle range rather than the ends. I like Akeem Spence. I thought he showed a pretty good promise on the season. I think he's the kind of guy that actually did more as a rookie than what we would have expected. And I think he does have a future with the Bucs.
I mean, obviously, unless he's getting into more trouble, I agree with you. I mean, he's already had, you know, an off-season arrest, and that's definitely not something that you want. But
Papa Lovey should be able to fix those.
Again, that's the thing, is that you've got a coach now who seems to be a little more, not necessarily understanding, but just more capable of dealing with people who don't exactly, you know, keep themselves on the straight and narrow all the time. I guess tolerant would be the word, even though that even denotes that he's okay with it, which I don't think he is. But, Spence more had flashes than he had consistency. There were a lot of times where he just kind of got washed around and pushed around, leaving holes open for running, and he didn't do a lot against the pass. Pro Football Focus only has him as pressuring the quarterback in any way 7 times on 354 pass rush snaps.
But that's not his job.
No, and it wasn't. And in Greg Schiano's defense, he was never going to. He was always just take up 2 guys while everyone else stunts around you. That was his job. So he's quicker than a lot of people think. He's extremely strong. And I think that he definitely merits, you know, consideration moving forward. But you know, is he what Lovie and Leslie Frazier want? And that's kind of going to dictate whether he's a backup or a starter next year. I don't think that Gary Gibson or Derek Landry are going to jump him and become the starter, because I don't think that those guys are any more of a Lovie Smith guy than Akeem Spence. So I would say that it's probably Spence's job to lose. But I do think that, you know, we could see an addition there. You don't pay a ton for a nose tackle. I don't think that it's going to be some big name acquisition. I don't think that the Bucks are going to look for a Sue and Fairley combination like they have in Detroit in terms of two really good defensive tackles. But I could definitely see a change there. And you actually did, I briefly mentioned William Golston, but you did forget defensive end who only
Jaquan Bowers.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of these guys are considerations as well with these ends, except for Bowers. But I was just looking through with Golston and Claiborne in terms of guys who can also play next to Gerald in pass rushing situations. So when you're looking forward at defensive tackle and you say, well, I don't really like Akeem Spence as a pass rusher, in pass rushing situations, you may see Golston or Claiborne playing in that spot next to Gerald and you know, showing a little more quickness in there than what Spence has. So that's something to consider as well.
All right, so let's move back to linebacker, and let's start right smack dab in the middle with Mason Foster. Again, I thought he had a pretty good year. For whatever reason, there have been some discussions of the Bucks going with a linebacker. So what's your thoughts on Mason Foster?
Yeah. The good thing and the bad thing from Mason's perspective is that since he can play multiple positions at linebacker, getting a middle linebacker doesn't mean replacing Mason Foster. It just means moving him. And we'll talk about the Sam position here in a second, but he's a perfect fit at the Sam position considering his skill set. And so if Lovie Smith wants to bring in a Mike linebacker, middle linebacker, who, you know, is frankly better in pass coverage than Mason Foster,
because which he very well may like to do, because that's the cover two defense.
Yes. Yeah. And even if it's not like, hey, let's play cover two every snap, just having a guy that you can bring in, even if it's just like a situational thing, because you don't have to always have a middle linebacker who plays every snap. And the Bucks even did that this year. I mean, Foster played 250 less snaps, 300 less snaps than Levante. I mean, they weren't always on the field together, because sometimes you would see, you know, Levante on the field with Casillas, or Levante on the field with Hayward, or Levante on the field with Watson in passing situations. It's not a requirement that your first two downs middle linebacker is always on the field for the third down. So it may not be as big of a deal as spending the seventh pick on a middle linebacker like a C.J. Mosley or even a Khalil Mack, who I've seen people projecting as being able to play middle linebacker, which I'm not sure. I'm not enough of a draftnik to figure out how that works. But, yeah, I think that Mason is good enough to keep a job with the team, but he's not a perfect schematic fit for what Mason or for what Lovie ideally wants out of the middle linebacker spot.
I think the most likely thing you're going to see with Mason is he's going to move to the Sam position, like you were kind of hinting at, because Dakota Watson, he just never seems to want to be able to get over that hump, which makes him from an average player to a good player. And I think we went through that again all this year. So I think the most likely position is that you're going to see Foster move, and they are going to bring someone in. I don't necessarily think it's going to be from the draft, because I don't see a guy that fits that Lovie scheme, Brian Urlacher. But
I think Mosley is very much like Levante David from everything I've seen. And so just to have a guy who has Levante's skill set but plays in the middle, I think would be good enough for what Lovie's looking for.
Well, if we can have more Levante Davids, I'm in.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, like you said, I think that he can. This is another position where I think that you can find a less than ideal guy in free agency, because he's going to be coached really well. So,
absolutely. So, what are your thoughts on Watson?
Well, Watson, I think Watson had a pretty good year, but he really didn't play that much. It seems like he did, but he really didn't, because that third linebacker spot comes off the field so often, and he was rotating with Casillas so much. But I thought he did really well. He was better than Quincy Black, which I mean isn't really saying much. Because
I was going to say, do you want my simile there?
Quincy Black did earn a contract in the NFL, which is something that Watson's going to have to do, because I'm pretty sure that he's up for his contract. So I think he's deserving. I think if you're going to stick with Mason at the middle linebacker spot, that you want Dakota Watson as your third guy, because both Casillas and Watson have their contracts up, and of the two of them, I'd rather have Watson, because I think that he made more sound plays. I think he did his role as a Sam linebacker better. I think Casillas, when he got plugged in at like other spots, he did some things, but I feel like in terms of
special teams is what really stuck out to me for Casillas.
Yeah, and that sticks out for Watson as well, which is kind of the interesting thing about those two, is that they're both very strong on special teams. I really like Watson. If I had to choose of all of the guys that are out of contract for the Bucs this offseason, Watson is the only one that I'm connected to in a way that's, you know, like that I feel like this guy should be back no matter what.
But is this EJ Biggers part two?
For in terms of me?
Yes.
Probably. I mean, Pro Football Focus agrees. He's one of only four guys to have a grade higher than one on defense, which is kind of sad when you think about it. But Gerald, Levante, and Durrell, the three guys you mentioned, all have very good grades. And then the only other guy to have a grade higher than one is Dakota Watson. So.
Which doesn't really, I mean, as you look through it, it shouldn't really surprise you. I think Goldson's the only one that you wish had a better year, but he really wasn't great this year. So let's move back another spot and let's go to the outside, to the cornerbacks. I'll start with Revis. It's a no-brainer. One of the best cornerbacks in the league. And
yeah,
for whatever reason,
people
still continue to disagree with that, and I just don't get it.
No. Yeah, I don't. Just go watch the – I know no one watched the Pro Bowl because they're too cool to watch the Pro Bowl. Go watch the Pro Bowl. He was Darrell Revis.
He's dominant.
Yes.
So we are Bucks fans. We're talking to Bucks fans. Everybody knows. In Buck fan land, we all know that Darrell Revis is a beast.
Yes.
So let's move to the other side, because that's where there are still some questions for me, because Leonard Johnson never really stepped into what we hoped.
No.
Jonathan Banks, I thought, got better as the season went on, but I still don't see a star there. Do you believe there's going to be a new cornerback on the other side, the non-Darrell Revis position, or is it going to be somebody that's already on this roster? Danny Gore is another guy that it could be.
I think that Banks has done enough to earn one of the top two non-Revis roles heading into next year, but I think that you could get somebody better than him to start. I'm just not sure where. Charles Tillman is obviously the name that comes up.
Yep.
Most often with his connections to Lovey in Chicago.
I was heading right there if you didn't.
Yeah, and I'd love to see that. I'm just not sure that you can play that guy 800 snaps.
But I don't think you have to necessarily. I think you put him in when he's needed, and then you go to a Leonard Johnson or a Jonathan Banks and then shift some things around. But what Peanut Tillman does is just it's unmatched.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I agree completely. I'd be okay with Jonathan Banks being the quote-unquote starter, but, you know, Tillman also plays 500, 600 snaps and even replaces Banks at times, you know, in two-corner situations, but always in a three-corner situation where you have the three of them out there. I think that would be great.
So you're pretty much thinking just kind of how I am, which they can use another one. It doesn't seem to be quite at the top of the list like it was last year, which is nice. But I still don't think they fully came around. And always in a league like this, the way it's set up now, you need more cornerbacks. It's similar to wide receivers. You need to have guys who can catch the ball. You need to have guys who can make other guys not be able to catch the ball. It's very important.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's next after quarterback, and wide receiver is probably cornerback.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Light said in an interview that he views corner as a premium position. So I definitely.
Which is great, and hopefully that's one of the first moves he makes, because another star would be awesome. You look at one of the two Super Bowl teams, and that's how they're built.
Yes.
Which is something that I think that's kind of the decision that Mark Dominic was trying to make, was to build from the back up and then go from there. It never really came together, and mainly because that's where we're going to head next, which is safeties. I just don't know what we have back there, because Deshaun Goldson apparently isn't allowed to play like Deshaun Goldson wants to play anymore. And Mark Barron, while I still believe has a future, I don't know that he's the star that I thought he was when last season ended.
Yeah, Barron's a tough one, because I feel like Barron was one of the guys who was the most misused in the last system, and that we'll find out pretty quickly what kind of a difference better coaching makes for him, because the fact that he was in pass coverage so often, and particularly in like deeper zone pass coverage so often, just baffled my mind.
It doesn't make sense,
right? The fact that Goldson was ever lined up against a tight end and Barron wasn't just blows my mind. Like, I don't understand how that could ever happen. Barron's primary role when a good tight end is on the field should be to cover that tight end. And there should be nothing else he does until that tight end is completely taken out of the game. But that just didn't seem to happen. They seemed to put random guys on tight ends, and I didn't understand why, but...
And tight ends lit the Bucs up all season long.
Yes. From day one, Kellen Winslow to, you know, all the way through. Yeah, absolutely.
So what's your plan? Mark Barron is a guy that obviously he's still going to be here. They're not going to cut him. He's on his third year of a rookie deal. He's not going anywhere. Is he the starter come next season?
Yeah.
Early next season?
Definitely. Definitely. I think both Barron and Goldson, I suspect that they were just used poorly, because a lot of their biggest faults were not being in the right spot. And I've got to say that coaching has to have something to do with that.
Okay, so now the new coaching staff is here, and we expect the defense to obviously be better, because that's what Lovie is. Is Deshaun Goldson and Mark Barron the spot that actually is the what we see, and what changes this defense from middle of the line to something that's top of the line defense?
I think so. I think that that's fair to say. Between defensive ends and safeties, I think those are the two positions that probably weren't being coached as well as they should by the last staff, and that stand to gain the most ground. So yeah, I mean, I could really see, you know, and maybe a smarter, better system that those guys see a big jump in their improvement, and I think with Goldson, I think that there's a pride issue there of just needing to tweak the way that he plays. I feel like that there are some hits in the NFL that are going to be called that shouldn't be, but there were some that he made that he just should not have made, and some that he tried to make and missed and that he should not have tried. So
I think he's going to benefit from when they do wind up changing the rules this offseason and allow those hits to be reviewed, which I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
He's going to be a big beneficiary of that.
Yeah, but he still has to mind his P's and Q's and be sure that he's actually following the rules and just being very violent about it, because they're still going to call a flag if you kind of barely hit the guy's head. Like, they're still going to call that even under review. So... but yeah, when he pops a guy in the chest and his head bangs back because of the impact, they're not going to call that anymore.
I mean, by the end of the year, I didn't see as many times that happening as what we saw the first 4 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I think that with better coaching, he's going to just feel more confident in his ability to do what he normally does without worrying about the hits as much.
All right, let's move on to special teams. First of all, let's start with the kicker. Connor Barth, in theory, should be back. Seems like that's going to be an upgrade right away, because kicking was not good this year.
Yeah, I mean, Lindell had okay stats, but you were just never confident in him, and some of the play calling changed because of the lack of confidence in him.
So that's certainly a benefit that he'll be back.
Yes.
Punter is a position that we kind of teased in the last podcast, and I think this is one where I think this is it. I think he's gone. I don't think you keep Michael Kanin.
Yeah, I don't think he can either, unless he takes a pay cut. He's not performing at a level that dictates him being one of the highest paid punters. He just doesn't. He doesn't do well enough. His net average.
So is that draft or is average, that free agency?
His inside the 20s. I don't think you need to draft one. I think you just snag one. I mean, Zoltan Mesko is going to be out there.
Just grab somebody.
Even though he's crazy. I love Chris Cluey, but there's
no doubt. Now, is he crazy, though?
He brings the circus with him, but...
Well, I don't think anything. And by the way, you can take Chris Cluey off the board because there's no way he plays for Leslie Frazier.
Leslie Frazier, that's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah, he and Leslie Frazier are not going to coincide.
That's not happening. Team.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a good call. But still, like I said, Zoltan Mesko, anyone who isn't picked up by their current team and is willing to take just a third of what Kanan's making, you know, it's an easily refilled spot, and you don't need to spend a draft pick on it.
Maybe we'll get a comp draft pick for Michael Bennett winning the MVP in the Super Bowl, and we can just use that one.
Yeah, I guess if the Bucks pick up two or three comp picks and one's at the end of the seventh, I'd be okay throwing that at a punter. But the last time we drafted a punter, he didn't even make the roster. So forgive me for being a little gun-shy on wanting to spend a pick on a punter.
All right, so then the last position is really kick returner. I'm going to just skip over Andrew Economos because, you know what, he really was fine this year, but I'm assuming that any of those guys should be fine. So
yeah. We
can really just skip that. Lovey's already made a comment or two that he wants the kicking game, kick return game, to be a difference maker on this team. It's something that it has not been ever for this franchise.
Yeah, other than some brief moments of Clifton Smith and Aaron Stecher being close to the league lead in kickoff return average, yeah, there's not been a lot of dynamicism or however you say it.
Is that a word?
The kicker, I don't know. It's close enough. You know what I meant, if not. But yeah, I think that this is a position that he'll address, and I think that you'll see player or players added who are specifically return men who also kind of do other stuff, but not really. And then obviously the return of Jeff Demps could figure in here as well.
So you hinted at it. You said a player who can return and then do other things, but not really do other things. You're clearly talking about Devin Hester.
Is Devin Hester a member of the Buccaneers? Yeah, but there are other options. But yeah, I mean, he's the one that comes to mind first, obviously.
So is he going to be on this team by the time this offseason ends?
I'm not sure that I'd put money on it that I'm that confident, but yeah, I think he will be.
See, I would. I don't see any situation where he's not. Well, he doesn't have any other choices at this point.
I guess that's fair. I guess that's fair. But I don't know. I could see a market for him as a Ted Ginn revival story like the Panthers saw this year, that someone may think that they could get that. I don't think that they will. I think you need to just stick him at returner. But I could see somebody signing him for cheap to be a wide receiver too.
All right. So all in all, we've gone through the offense. We've gone through the defense. We've gone through the special teams. And there's only about five spots, maybe six, throughout the entire team, and one of those is punter, that we've said this needs to change and there needs to be some sort of they need to address it in some sort of way. I think that's pretty good for a team that when you look at 22 starters on offensive defense and then kicker, punter, and returner, that's 25 spots. That's pretty good that we're only looking at five or six on a team that's a four-win team.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of when we kept on bringing up better coaching will make this better, et cetera. I think that that really speaks to it right there, is that this team isn't full of holes. It just wasn't put together well, and it wasn't coached well last year. So I think that that'll really change, you know, heading into next year.
Anything else we missed in going through the offense and defense special teams that you want to touch on before we get out of here?
Not in particular. I mean, we're obviously going to have time to talk about the draft and free agency and the guys that are available and who might plug into those spots. So really looking too far ahead other than the obvious things like Tillman and Hester. I really don't think that there's much more to say. I mean, there are the superstars that we didn't talk about today on defense. So it just bears mentioning them again, just how good Gerald McCoy, Levante David, and Darrell Revis are. And I'm excited to see what Lovey Smith can do with them because I think that he can really get even more out of all three of those guys.
All right, give me a Super Bowl winner.
It's got to be Seahawks for me. I think that they may win in quote unquote their style pretty easily. I think they may wind up winning by 10, but like a 30-20 game where they just kind of control things until the end. That defense, I just think is so good that they're going to really throw Peyton off his game and then people are going to blame it on the cold.
I'm with you. I got Seahawks by somewhere in the range of 3 to 5. The one bet that I do want to mention that people can make some money on is the last score of the game. It will not be a touchdown in this game. I'm telling you, place your money, get $5 or $10 or however you want to put on Seahawks field goal, put the same amount on the Bronco field goal. You're getting 4 to 1 on both of them. We're going to double your money and then some. We're going to make you some money. The last score of the game will not be a touchdown. Make some money on it. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I can't see it being a touchdown either. That's an interesting set of prop bets there. We'll definitely, by the end of the week, even if it's just me and my lack of gambling acumen, I'm definitely going to take a look at the prop bets. So if you're listening to this, definitely stop by the site over the next couple days and you should find something on some of the bigger prop bets. But that's, you know, at least Ken's first special for you. And it definitely makes sense. This game may not feature more than 3 or 4 touchdowns total anyway. So your odds are still, you know, that the last one is a touchdown is even lower.
All right, so that's it for the Pewter Plank Podcast. I'm Ken Bulkey. As always, I'm joined by Leo Howell. And enjoy the Super Bowl. We'll see you next week.
Adios.